February may be the shortest month of the year, but we still found room for a huge special event. In addition to our regular monthly shows on February 13th in San Diego and February 21st in Denver, the narrators will be guest curating Untitled Final Fridays at the Denver Art Museum on February 23rd. For one night only, we're taking over the entire museum, filling it with storytellers, artists, activities, and more. Check out our Facebook page and website in the coming weeks for more details, and we sure hope to see you there.
Next storyteller.
All right, next storyteller.
Next storyteller.
Our next storyteller.
Welcome to the Narrators Podcast.
This podcast collects stories that were told at the Narrators, a monthly storytelling event that features people telling true stories based on a theme.
When he's not writing product descriptions for oscilloscopes, Richard Freeland tells stories in San Diego. He told this one on December 12th, 2017 at Tiger Tiger Tavern. The theme was chance.
Yeah, this is my perfect height, yes. Hello, I'm going to be talking about actually a tall person today, speaking of height. And I'm going to be telling a story about the summer that I lived in Japan. And I was trying to think of which story I should choose because there's a lot of wild things that happened while I was there. But I decided I had only met one Nikolai in my life, so I'll tell a story about my dear friend Nikolai and the chance he took in coming to Japan. So the first morning I met Nikolai was my second morning in Japan, and I sort of groggily stumbled down the stairs from my three-story dorm and went into the dining hall, and I began what would become my morning ceremony of eating this very, very fluffy yet very inexpensive bread we were served each morning, and then watching this particular Japanese channel that would feature news stories every morning. And I believe the story that morning was about cute porcupines, because about 70% of Japanese news media has to do with cute animals. And this is true, and it's far superior to what we have to offer, and it's really a shame. So I was munching on my fluffy toast, and I looked around the table, and I was like, and you know, in Japan, there's not a lot of diversity. This room would be very diverse room for Japan, but our table and our dorm was even more diverse than what we have here. There were people from Uzbekistan, from Austria, from Mexico, from countries that I've forgotten. I don't know. Estonia. Who knows what that is? But basically, I was looking around the room because I was sizing up my dorm mate to see who I wanted to go running with. And this was a prudent choice. I needed a running buddy because the morning before my first morning in Japan, I had gone for a quick jog and gotten lost for 3 hours. And so I needed a sort of guide, someone who was street savvy and who was who could kind of Sherpa me through the narrow streets of Japan. And so I said, "Hey, anyone want to go running tomorrow morning at 6? And then everyone just kind of looks up like, and then so this very tall, looming figure at the end of the table sort of leaned over and he says, "I will go with you." And so I said, "Oh, that sounds delightful. Then thank you." And so. And I was walking back to my dorm, and I was thinking, who is this guy? I haven't met him yet. And I was glad that I had a running buddy, but I was curious because I hadn't seen him talking to anyone else. And I woke up the next morning to like a pounding on the door, and I opened it, and then there before me, sort of crouching a little bit because he didn't fit in the Japanese door frame, was Nikolai. And he was this towering figure who had jet black hair and these like flinty dark eyes and this like cruel aristocratic face. And he would wear these like faded polos that sort of reminded me, made me think he was maybe sort of like the son of a disenfranchised like Eastern European lord, and that his ancestors would like ride around on like giant horses and carry sabers and things like that. And so he just was like, he was standing before me and he said, "I think I know where we will go today." And I said, "Yes, we will go there. Let's do it." As I was ready to go into battle for him. And so we took off into the morning mist, and we were running along. And I was running. It's not really fair to say he was running. He was more at a cantering pace. And he wasn't fully extending his legs. He didn't need to when he was running with me, and I don't think he ever got like a real run when we were together, but he was very kind in that regard. But what was important about that morning was that I looked up at him and I saw this dark intensity as he was navigating his mental map of the canals and the side streets that made up our Tokyo suburb. And I knew that there was something different about him. He was tapped into the energy of Japan. He was living in the city in a way that most of the foreigners were not. And so I began to notice more things about him. One of the things was that most foreigners spent their time either going to like mega clubs and getting fucked up, or going to taking selfies in kimonos at Shinto shrines. And that was not Nikolai's idea of what Japan was about. He was training his body, learning Aikido, learning martial arts, and he was training his mind every night, mastering Japanese. And sometimes he was not just socially distant from the dorm; he was physically distant. I would see him walking through the hallway, and I'd be like, Nikolai, you know, you haven't been here in a while. I haven't seen you in maybe 5 days. Where have you been? And you say, I went to Osaka and I worked at a carnival. And then I would be like, oh, that's good. And then, or he'd go be gone for a week, and I'd say, Nikolai, what's up? Where you been? And he'd be like, I went to Hokkaido and I translated for a Serbian couple who want the Japanese operation. And this is his true voice. The voice is authentic, because Nikolai had this lilting musical voice when he spoke English, at least. And he would sort of, I'm not sure whether it was a Russian-English thing or whether it was a Nikolai thing. I like to think that it was his way of talking, and that he would just sort of start every sentence with sort of a question, and then he would just sort of like allow it to sort of answer itself. He wasn't really worried, or he'd say something like, you fucking Americans, you, why are you always killing everything, or things like that. But this distance was, I didn't realize that how lonely he was until one night I was playing my guitar in my dorm, and he walked by, and you know, the doorway is kind of like here, and he kind of like walked, and I saw his torso, and then he kind of ducked down and he said, shit sounds good. And then he left, and I was like, what is he? And he came back and stood in the doorway, and he had a guitar in his hands, and without saying a word and without looking at me, he sat down and he began to play this song. And this like haunting, gravelly voice sort of escaped from his mouth. And he was bent over this guitar and in this embrace, playing this dark winter tune. And I knew he was singing about Russia. And he told me later, he said, I was singing about Russia. I was singing about the daily commute of people living in the USSR during the bad times, who would sit there on the metro, and they'd look at the wall, and there was a sign there that would read on many of these cars, no way out. And it was a poorly worded sign put there by some sort of bureaucratic agency explaining to people that this was not an exit. But unluckily for them, it turned out that most of these people didn't really have an exit in their lives. But to me, it was a song about Nikolai. It was a song about the cold, merciless hands who had seized him and arrested him when he was standing alone on the roadside protesting the Sochi Olympics, that had incarcerated him, that had thrown him into jail. Just as they had thrown into jail his spiritual predecessors, who were the romantics and the idealists of Russia. And luckily for him, unlike them, he got to leave. He left the prison the next morning, and he was able to retreat into the loving embrace of emotional anime, of shy, coquettish tales of high school romance, which had lured him to Japan. And I knew in that moment that really he was an exile from three worlds. He had too of a finer sensibility to live with the Russians. He was clearly not Japanese, and the foreigners that lived with us didn't understand him. And I wonder for the rest of my time there, why did he take this chance? Why did he come to Japan? You know, why did he make such a leap? And I remember him in his last days there, one of the last times I saw him, he was walking down the hallway one afternoon. I said, Nikolai, you only got a few days left. And, you know, how was it? How was your trip? And so he looks at me and he says, it was fucking terrible. And I hate this country and it was a waste of my time. And so I kind of looked at him and because he went to one of the best universities in Japan and learned, you know, mastered Japanese and even had his hair by that point cut into a certain, like a sort of a shaved, you know, bob style. And then I just laughed because I realized that Nikolai had learned, perhaps much earlier than I had learned or many of us had learned, that when you take a chance in life, you have to embrace whatever fate finds you. And that was his final revenge against his cold, you know, sort of lifeless aristocratic ancestors that were also happened to be imaginary but were very real to me. And they had fought with sabers and with steeds that they ran down their serfs with. And he fought with honesty and with being genuine and with crying at emotional anime films. And so I'm so glad that he also embraced me while I was there. So thank you very much.
Richard Phelan, thank you.
The Narrators is produced by Robert Rutherford, Mary Robertson, Aaron Rollman, and me, Ron Doyle. Our assistant producer is Sydney Crane. Our theme music is by Whalehawk, and our founder and executive producer is Andrew Orvidal. A very special thanks to our amazing sponsors, Illegal Pete's, Sexy Pizza, From the Hip Photo, and Renegade Brewing Company. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. And join us at one of our live monthly shows, which take place every second Tuesday of the month at Tiger Tiger Tavern in San Diego, California, and every third Wednesday of the month at Bumport Theater in Denver, Colorado. Both shows start at 8 p.m. and are always free to attend. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, and for past episodes, photos from our live shows, and a list of our upcoming events and themes, please visit thenarrators.org. Thanks for listening.